Okay, so Paul, your recent short story collection, Terms of Engagement, explores father and son as intimate enemies with a yearning to be understood, acknowledged, and validated by each other. Where did the inspiration for the stories come from?
The inspiration for the stories probably came largely from my own experience as a son, so that while the collection is fiction, meaning the characters are all fictional, the scenarios, the scenes, etc., the locations are all fictional, the themes that I think are embedded in all of the stories are largely grow out of my own experience as a son.
All right. That's great.
I'm happy to expand on that a little bit if you want me
sure,
to.
Sure, yeah, if you're comfortable, that would be great.
I'm always comfortable. I mean, I think that you know, I don't want to try to at all in any way indicate to a reader what they ought to think, and I like to think that this is literary fiction. And what I mean by literary fiction is that there's a writer whom I like a lot, and I actually worked with her, did a book with her. Her name is Elif Batuman, and she once suggested that one way to characterize literary fiction is to look at characters trying to figure out how to make their life more coherent. That really is what I think exists with all of the characters in these stories, and one of the things that causes their lives, whether it's the father or the son, depending on whose point of view the story is from, to sort of feel incoherent, have to do with some of the themes in the book, which really have to do with things like being seen, being acknowledged, being heard by the other, wanting to be validated, wanting to be understood, as you had mentioned earlier, and the sort of difficulty that in these stories both father and son seem to have with these things, in particular the difficulty that, for example, some of the fathers in this book have with, in fact, acknowledging their own sons, the difficulty that some of the sons in the stories have with finding that acknowledgement from their father, finding that validation from their father. And those are some of the particular themes that create this notion of what I'm calling intimate enemies.
That's very personal.
Yeah.
Thank you for sharing that.
You're welcome.
So not only did you write this short story collection, but you directed it as well. Can you talk about the benefits and challenges of managing both of those things?
I can, thank you. That's a great question, I think. So my background is as a theater director, and I've been an audiobook producer and director for decades now. I also teach, I coach storytelling. So I would say the benefits of being able to direct my own work are that in my head I hear it, and I don't have to necessarily talk to someone else about what I think the way an author might have to. I'm also a director, so I'm able to think to myself, okay, this is what I hear, and now I'm going to be able to do my best with the talent that I have to sort of get actualized what I hear. The challenge is to make sure that I, as a director, treat the actors the way I would if they were doing, let's say, fiction that wasn't written by me, which means that if they're connected, if they're engaged, if they're effectively, you know, doing the kind of job that's creating a compelling piece of storytelling, to leave them alone and to let them interpret the way they want to interpret without me constantly stopping them and saying, yeah, but I heard it this way, I heard it that way, which I think I did a pretty fair job of, although you'd have to talk to some of the narrators who worked on the book to see what they think, but at least they're all still talking to me.
That's great.
Yeah.
So as a Grammy-winning audiobook producer, director, coach, and of course, being an author, it's very clear that you have a passion for audiobooks and storytelling. So I'm curious to know, and I'm sure other people are as well, what sparked this passion?
Well, the answer is yes, I do have a passion for it. I have always loved working with actors. I've worked with them my whole life as a director, and I still can, well, sometimes if I'm working with a storyteller doing an audiobook, you know, and that actor sort of gets something that we've talked about, I can still will kind of put my fist in the air and think, yeah, they did it. They got it. So I still feel that visceral passion after all these years when I do it. And what sparked it, that passion? I'm not 100% sure. I've always been interested in the theater. I have a bachelor's degree in theater. I have a master's degree in theater from Bowling Green State University. My BA is from a little college called Yankton College in South Dakota. I've directed and also performed my whole life. So I think it's that combination of performance and directing experience that I've had my whole life in the theater that translated really smoothly into audiobooks. And very briefly, the very first audiobook that I directed some 431 years ago was for Simon & Schuster. This was in the old days, probably right around 1990, might even have been a teeny bit before. And they were working with an actor named Stacy Keach, and I met somebody, and I'd directed plays before with celebrities, and he was a celebrity at the time. And I'd met somebody, and anyway, they asked me, you know, they were a little intimidated by him, can you work with him? And I said, well, I think so. I did, and we had a wonderful experience, and so off it went from there.
Wow, that's a great story.
Oh, thank you.
That's really incredible, and I don't know that a lot of people be lucky enough to share that kind of passion for something they get to do every day.
It's fun, and fun isn't really the right word. I think if I was going to describe it, what I would say is that to walk away, you know, not every book that you direct, you're not sitting there. It's not a scintillating experience from beginning till end, but not much in life really is. That said, there are multiple narrators that I've worked with. And then when the book is good, it is a very viscerally absorbing and connecting and in the now, in the moment experience. And feels very good. That feels very good at the end of the day. Oh, someone is ringing my telephone. I'm so sorry.
It's okay.
Okay. Sorry about that.
No worries. So just moving along, when you are casting somebody as a narrator for an audiobook, what do you tend to look for?
That's such a good question. I've never really been asked that question before by someone like you, and I think it's a great question. So what do you look for in a narrator? Here's what I look for. The first thing I look for if I'm having, let's say, an audition and I'm going to cast someone, which I did a lot of and much more of in the past. I still do a little bit of it now, but much, much more. I used to work for one particular audiobook company for almost 20 years often handed me the book and said, here, you cast it, you do it, and we'll let you know what we think. And they always seemed to appreciate what I did, and I cast lots of first-time narrators who have gone on now to become really household names, like Holter Graham. Are you familiar with
them? Yes, absolutely.
Yeah, and just Oliver Wyman, do you know that name?
Mm-hmm.
Yep, all the way down the line, lots of people who I cast them for the first time. So what did I look for? What I looked for was to see if they could intuitively connect to the subtext. Do you know what I mean by that?
Mm-hmm.
What I mean is that when you're narrating a book, you're, of course, speaking the words, but the words aren't actable. An actor can't act the words. The only thing the actor can act are the feelings beneath the words. That's what actors do. The words are really the author's purview. That's what the author is communicating to us. The actor, while they need to read and understand the words so that they know what they're talking about, What's actable are the feelings beneath the words, if you know what I mean. Mm-hmm. So I look to see if the actor can intuitively connect to the subtext meaning that's the emotionality between the words. If they, let's say, if I think, okay, let's try this, maybe they're not quite where I want them to be, then I would give them a direction and see if that direction assisted them in connecting to the subtext. So, of course, it's my responsibility to give them a good direction, but that said, I'm looking to see if the actor with that direction can get there. And if they can, and if they do a pretty good job of connecting to the subtext, then I'm going to be pretty positive about their capacity to create a compelling performance.
Great.
Does that make sense, what I'm suggesting? Does that sound a little too arcane, or does that make sense to you?
No, it makes perfect sense, and I'm sure that's helpful for listeners. So I'm not sure if that's, I guess, the thing that I really deeply want to know is if there are listeners who are out there hoping to find success as, whether they're a narrator or a producer, a director or a coach, what advice would you give them?
Well, if a listener, let's see, so producer, director, coach.
I realize that's a long list of things.
That's fine. I would say, let me take two of those. Let me take producer separately and director and coach separately.
Great.
So director and a coach are essentially working with narrators to create, a better, I like the term compelling, a more compelling performance. So if you're a director or if you're a coach, your primary obligation is to know how to work with an actor, to essentially know how to direct and coach them. So what specifically does that mean? To me, that means that you as a director or a coach need to understand and know how to give that actor or narrator an actable direction. Some people perhaps who work with narrators can get frustrated because the narrator may not be creating a performance in the way that they want, and they just don't know how to tell the narrator what to do, so they'll say, can you do it again? Can you do it faster? Can you do it slower? And there's a lot of kind of incapacity or inability to clearly express themselves to the narrator. So if you're going to be a coach, if you're going to be a director, it's your responsibility to know how to get that narrator to connect where their emotional center is from there into the subtext, and to then in turn be able to translate or reconnect that back to the listener. So I call those actable directions. And actable directions, I could give you examples of them. They might or might not make sense, but they make sense to actors. So I'll give you one quick example in audiobook world, for example.
Okay.
If you look at third-person audiobook where the storyteller is telling the story, it's not first-person, so it's not Paul Rubin telling, it's not the character Paul telling his story. Let's say it's just this sort of third-person narrator. What engages the listener, what gets the listener involved in the story, is when the third-person storyteller gets inside the head of the point of view of whoever that story is from. So let's say that story is about Michelle, and the narrator is saying, Michelle walked along the road and wasn't feeling very good and decided that she just didn't want to be a journalist anymore. So if the narrator could report that information and effectively say, Michelle walked along the road and wasn't feeling very good and decided she didn't want to be a journalist anymore. So for me, that's sort of a report, and while the listener understands it, it's not in the here and now, it's not in the present, it's not engaging. So what's an actable direction that begins to get the narrator to make that more compelling? I find with narrators, if I tell them, get inside Michelle's head. How does Michelle feel? Michelle doesn't feel very good right now. Get in her head. Get that third-person storyteller inside the head of Michelle. You're not Michelle, but you got to get closer to her. And then now go ahead and once you're there, let me hear that narration again. And then what you're likely to hear is something like, Michelle walked down the road and realized she just didn't want to be a journalist anymore. So you hear the difference between A and B?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, very clearly.
A is what I call reporting. B is what I call storytelling.
Hmm.
And it's storytelling. That's what makes listeners say, wow, that was great. I really liked that. I really thought that was a good story. Often listeners, of course, may or may not have a vocabulary that's going to help them be totally clear about it, and that's not their job. They either like it or don't like it. But what's going on with the listener is that either they are emotionally engaged by the narrator or they're not. They may be somewhere in between, but the job of the storyteller is to emotionally engage that listener. And if you're a coach and a director, you need to be able to give that storyteller actable directions that get them connected to the subtext. Real quick, so if you want to find success as a producer, mm-hmm. I think that you have to really enjoy the process of putting together a good team that you believe will create a compelling performance. A director, a narrator, other people that are sort of involved in that process. You need to know how to really work well with an author, and you need to be able to always have your eye on the final product and your eye on this sort of team's effort to create the best possible audiobook program.
Well, that is excellent advice, and certainly, I mean, I'm inspired to follow in your footsteps. Really wonderful advice. Is there anything that you want to add more about your process or about this particular audiobook in general?
Sure. I would say my, real quickly, my process as a director, which is what I do, I mean, I'm a writer and a director, so I have two jobs, which keeps me really busy. I would say I think there's a lot of commonality between writing and directing, but for the moment, what I would say, if I could say one thing about my process with working with narrators, is the following. When you direct, let's say, a book that has 100,000 words, so that'd be roughly a 10-hour audiobook. You have to be, your first obligation is to the publisher, and they expect you to essentially get that book done. Maybe for every finished hour, it takes you about 2 hours of work to get one finished hour, which means that you don't have time to sit around with the narrator, have a big conversation about the book. You can't talk about every sentence. You can't micromanage the storyteller. So then what can you do as a director to create the best possible performance you can? And what I try to do is, in my mind, imagine a kind of a stream. And on either side of the stream, you are not connecting to the subtext. So if I hear that the narrator is somehow not connected to the emotionality beneath the words, that the narrator is reporting information rather than feeling it, that the narrator sounds distant from the story rather than being in there sort of in the here and now, that the narrator's not quite connected to the stakes, that the stakes may be, for example, the emotional stakes very high and the narrator sounds less than committed to those stakes, that to me means that the narrator is sort of outside that stream. And so if I see that, then my job is to quickly try to give that narrator an actable direction to get that narrator back into the stream so that the narrator can make all those choices and organically and intuitively be present and in the here and now, and then I don't have to say anything. Does that make sense?
It does, yes.
Yeah. Otherwise, it would take you, 6 months to direct an audiobook, and you can't do that. So you really heavily have to rely on the narrator's intuitive ability.
That's great. I really appreciate you sharing all of your wisdom and lessons. So, Paul, thank you so much for that as well as your time. It's a great story, everybody. So listen to Terms of Engagement on the audiobooks.com app today.